Hello and welcome to All Brother, a podcast about Manchester / Salford's legendary musical institution, The Fall. Each week we invite on a guest to chat about their memories and interactions with the group. You can find us on Spotify and Apple and all the usual suspects, but we're hosted at shows.acast.com/old-brother. For episode 5 of series 4, we welcome musician, author, guitarist, one-time cramp and currently frontman for the utterly brilliant Pink Monkey Birds. Please say hello to the marvellous Kid Congo Powers. Hello, here we are, latest episode of All Brother. How are you, Steve? Are you okay?
I'm okay, thanks, yeah.
Good, good. Got old friend of yours on here now. Go back a long way, you and this lad.
We go way back, yeah.
We go way back together. We've got a relationship. Right, well, without further ado, I shall introduce him now because he's a busy man. He wears a lot of different hats. Good evening, Kid Congo Powers.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good evening.
Good to talk to you.
Where are you at the moment, Kid?
I'm in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. Yes.
Is that where you live?
No. I live in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay.
Kind of the opposite of Washington, D.C. Now, I'm here to rehearse because my guitar player lives here. And we're about to embark on a Europe, U.K. tour.
You are in Manchester.
So we downsized from a 4-piece to a 3-piece. So we actually have to rehearse this time.
So there's only 2 Pink Monkey Birds.
Yes. Well, there'll be 3. Yeah, 2.
Well, we always have this conversation, don't we? They're like Wayne Fontana and the Mindbenders. Is Wayne Fontana a Mindbender, or is he
a spoonbender? Yes.
You're going to be playing in Manchester.
No, we're just doing actually Mark Riley and Co. show. We're doing a session, so there's no gig because they are now on the late night. So it's not possible to do a gig same day.
So do you make it work? We've had a few conversations about this lately. Can you make it work financially these days? Gigging in the UK?
Yeah, it actually works surprisingly. And it's been good the last years. You know, the first years it was not so good because we probably started around 2009 with the Pink Monkey Birds, and those were not super well attended. And but over time it's good. Life is good. Yeah,
great stuff.
People seem to like it.
Fantastic. So. We don't want to go back with a career overview. So if I was going to start your career, do I start with the chair of the pres of the Ramones fan club? Is that right?
Well, that's about a good start as any.
Wow.
Yes.
So how did you get that job?
Well, I appointed myself the president. the way any president makes it. What it was I was starting a fanzine for them, and that's what it was. And that was because the Ramones, when they came, because it was a revelation. Well, the Ramones were a revelation. Part of that revelation was like after they played their show, they walked into the audience and said, "Oh, where's the good record store to go to? And can you take me there?" The line between the rock star you see coming out of backstage covered by bodyguards and dark glasses and thrown into a limousine, that was not happening. That's how I thought of rock stars before that.
Exactly what happened in Manchester as well. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. People were just people. They played every, suburb, the Ramones, when they first came, they just played everywhere. So there was like several shows you could go to in driving distance. And I noticed that the same group of people were at all of these gigs. And I was probably 16 at this time. And we started like calling each other and writing postcards to each other because there was no internet. And, And I just thought, oh, well, maybe if we had a newsletter to tell everyone what was going on, we'd all know and we could, you know
yeah.
not bother our mothers by tying up the phone all night. and so, you know, I think the manager, Danny Fields, and the record label saw a good thing, you know, some kids wanted to do some work. They actually made a lot of things available, like news and promo material and the use of their copy machine, and you know it was good. Yeah.
Yeah. So where were you based at that point? Were you
in Los Angeles?
Yes, and they were in New York, were they? At that stage,
yeah, they're a New York band, and they inspired me to go to New York shortly after a bunch of kids. We took a Greyhound bus across the country because we couldn't bear being left out of CBGB's and Max's Kansas City, you know. And so we all got a $69 one-way, three-day bus ride to New York. And, and landed there and, you know.
That's a film, isn't it? That's a movie.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. If you just get a producer, what a way. So how long were you in New York then? Because you were, when you first started playing in bands, you were back in LA, were you?
Yeah, no, it's hard to tell how long I was there. But I did write a book, so now I have a timeline. So I was there probably about like half a year, maybe. Then you know, I ran out of money and no prospects. I came back to LA and then. And saved up enough money again and went back, and the same thing, kind of went back and forth. And so by like late 79, early 80s, when I met Jeffrey Lee Pierce and started the Gun Club, you know, kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It happened as was the times.
Yeah. So we had Marcia on a while back. We talked about Jeffrey Lee Pierce, and I always got the impression from reading or looking from outside that he was a bit of he was quite hard work, but she seemed to think he was a lovely guy. That's what you, I believe.
Well, he was somewhere in between the two. And it will all depend where who you ask what. So okay. You know, Marcia was lovely and wonderful, and so he was nice to her, and I had a fine relationship with Jeffrey. We were both trouble, and troubled, but we had like kind of a more brotherly sort of. You know, relationship really.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really realize that really until I wrote my book, because I was like, oh yes, we both grew up with only sisters, brought up primarily by the mother. You know, it was like really like, and we had no brothers. So when we started that group, it was very, you know, and he like was like a big brother, because he like said, you're going to play guitar. And I'm like, I don't know how to play guitar.
Is that true that you haven't played guitar until he said you should play guitar? Is that true?
No. Yeah, it's entirely true.
That's amazing.
I mean, I was a big music fan, big record collector, like big concert goer. And I thought, I'll be in music somehow. But I thought I'd be a journalist or a record company, A&R or something. You know, I didn't know what form it was going to take. And then he said, oh, you're going to be a guitar player. and I said, no, I'm not. And he said, yes, you are.
And I thought
if he believes in me, I guess I should try it, you know.
And how long did it take you to learn then?
About a week. No. I mean, we got together with some other, beginning musicians, and we all just kind of hammered it out, like, you know, until, I mean, luckily Jeffrey knew how to write songs, you know?
Yeah.
So there was actually some structure. And then we just kind of, banged around until it started to sound like something. And, and it didn't seem like before too long that something was happening. Actually, really recently, I unearthed some old rehearsal tapes that I had buried because I had listened to them some years ago and thought, nobody is ever going to hear these. These are too diabolical for anyone to hear. But then I listened to them more recently and I'm like, oh, pretty good. You know, it sounds like a band beginning and not knowing what they're doing, but it has something's there.
You know? Yes. Are they releasable quality? Or?
They are, actually.
Wow.
I have digitized them and they may show up somewhere.
Nothing's buried forever anymore, is it? Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. You can fix it up.
But, yeah.
I don't know.
The new Beatles single's coming out soon, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Oh, good Lord. Have mercy. Oh, wow. They don't give up, do they?
No, they don't. They need the money, obviously. You know.
Yes.
Clearly. Yeah. So when I was researching, I was quite surprised how quickly you went from the Gun Club to the Cramps. I thought it was pretty quick, wasn't it? It was probably the next year, was it?
About a year, yeah. We were, you know, the Gun Club at the time was a band that, you know, had, you know, other bands liked us and all the girlfriends, and that was the audience, you know, the 10 people in the audience. Yeah. And Lux and Ivy had... Yeah, you know, Brian Gregory had left the band mysteriously in the middle of the night. And they moved to Los Angeles. And some friends from New York said, oh, you should check out this guy. You know, you have met him before in New York. So I had seen the Cramps many times in the earliest days. And then, but they said, you know, they are a kind of a Cramps spinoff band and they have a song about Ivy and you should go see them. And they showed up, saw it, and then they recorded it. Because speaking of tapes, this tape that Lux recorded of that show just made its way into my possession again, just this year. And, within a week they called me up and said, we must talk to you. And I said, okay, come over to my house. And they came over and they said, do you want to be in our band? And I said, yes, I think I do. And they said, okay, what would you sacrifice? No, then I said, so, you know, and they're like, good. And I'm like, well, what should I do? Do you want me to, they said, what would you sacrifice to be in this band? And I said, sacrifice? I said, quit my band or relocate or quit school or whatever. And they said, no, nothing like that. They said, would you cut a finger off to be in the Cramps? And I said, I thought about it. You know, it's not very smart because then I won't play guitar. But no, I said,
a guitarist, really?
Yes,
no.
Yes, exactly.
Had I gone for a toll, really, probably would have been better.
Yes, it could have been. I don't think you need all five fingers to do that music either. But then they said, okay, you can be in our band. And then I was in the Cramps.
Fantastic.
And so how did the Gun Club take that then? How did they feel?
Well, I went to Jeffrey and I said, like, oh, wow, the Cramps just asked me to play in them. And I don't know, you know, I said, yeah, but I don't know what's good. You know, they said they just want me to be in the Cramps and not in the other band. And he is like, are you crazy? Of course you should be in the Cramps. And he said, but not even thinking, he'd already replaced me the minute I said it. He's like, okay, but we'll continue and you'll get us gigs with the Cramps.
Okay. All right. So not completely altruistic then.
Yes, exactly. There was an agenda. Yeah.
Right, okay.
But I did. I kept my promise.
Well, that year, that's 1980, isn't it? That year the Cramps had toured with The Fall in the first half of the year, sort of March, April kind of time. And Brad must have been some of Brian Gregory's last gigs.
Yeah, it would have been at the end of Brian,
My first gig with The Fall was supporting The Cramps at the Electric Ballroom.
Oh wow! Is that with Brian? Yeah.
I think he must have run out of money because he smashed a guitar every night, so it must have been costing him a fortune to do gigs.
I know. He played the Ibanez guitar, so yeah. It might not. It was a little. It was not the the Gibson.
Not the most expensive.
Yes.
No.
It's not expensive, and you can afford to break one every night. I mean, you know, that's quite the extreme, isn't it?
That is pretty extreme. And you, well, maybe he just played them broken.
Yeah, maybe. Just sellotape them back together every night.
Yeah, super glue could work wonders. I joined the Cramps in 1980. We started recording the Psychedelic Jungle, and
while we're on the subject of that album, you must be quite pleased with the reception for Goo Goo Muck from Wednesday.
Oh yeah, it's great, isn't it?
It's incredible. It's got 17 million views now or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, all of my friends like our age have teenage kids now.
Yeah.
You know, and they're all like, thank God you've made me cool with my kids finally. I get to say, I know the guitar player on that song. My kids listen to me. So if nothing else, I saved that generation of parents from total uncoolness.
Well, they're coming around a bit now. Totally Wired seems to be on every program every 5 minutes as well.
Yeah.
All the people, they've all grown up and got responsible jobs, the people who used to listen to that stuff in the 80s, I think.
Yeah, now they're putting their favourites on the TV.
I have to say, I watched a film of you playing it live as part of my research.
On TV.
No, the Cramps playing Goo Goo Muck live. They were pretty cool before you joined, but that film with them, it's like the four coolest people on earth, that you playing Goo Goo Muck live on stage. Except for the bit where Lux keeps swallowing the microphone and making these really, really disturbing noises.
that was the one. No, he did that every night. I was talking yesterday. I was talking to someone yesterday. There's some people. I did a book talk, and someone asked about the Cramps. What was it like? You know, everyone wants to know what was it like. And I said, well, he was pretty inexplicable and pretty magical. You know, every night, you know, something crazy happened every night, and I can explain to you how it happened. You know, like he'd jump off PA stacks or but my favorite one was that once, you know, when it was in the, you know, maybe 81, 82 in the new wave days and in somewhere in America, and we were playing and a girl jumped on stage with a leotard and a cheerleader skirt and her high top sneakers on and was dancing next to Lux. And I swear I looked, you know, at my neck for like 1 second to make sure I was getting one of the three chords that we played. I hope I'm hitting the right one. And I looked back up and I looked, the girl was just in her leotard and Lux had her skirt on and was imitating her dancing. And I just thought, that happened in like 1 second, like a flash of a second. He was like a magician of sorts.
Yeah, of course.
And hilarious.
Yeah. So what were the circumstances of you leaving the Cramps then? Did you go, you went back to the Gun Club then? Is that right?
I went back to Gun Club. I mean, there was a time in the Cramps where they were having troubles with the record label and with IRS, and they were trying to get some accounting, and of course couldn't get any. And there was a lawsuit going on and this and that. And we were playing live, but we weren't playing like anything new. We were just doing a bunch of cover versions, and they were forbidden to record. And then, someone was part of this lawsuit and the ongoing. There was a lot of dead time, you know, and I was getting into some dead time activities like drugs and alcohol. And then we made, you know, then there was an idea like, oh, you know, so many bootlegs come out, you know, or coming out. Mm-hmm. of the Cramps, and they were like, well, let's just record our own live album. So they, with their own money, financed that EP, which was The Smell of Female, Live at the Pedal
Lounge.
Which was a, you know, a nice live recording. And but then after that, you know, it just was like a dead period. One day I just got a call from Ivy saying, yo, I don't know what's going on with us. I don't know. Maybe we should just not play. And I was like, okay, this is a really nice way to fire me. So they were actually nice to me. And I've heard from other ex-members that was not the case, so I felt pretty good about that.
Fired though.
Yes, exactly. But I actually I was going to make a solo record then, you know. I was going to make some kind of solo record, and then at that time Jeffrey's band had quit. You know, he had flown to Australia and half the band didn't get on the plane. Just right at that time, I got a phone call from Jeffrey saying, can you come to Australia like tomorrow? I said, I'm not doing anything else, you know? So that was the start of being in the Gun Club again. We did several years of work after that. The Las Vegas Story and Mother Juno.
So what year would that have been then?
Probably 84-ish. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we did a festival with you. Where was it? Was it Holland? John Cale was on, the Gun Club were on, the Fall were on. That was 84. Where was that? I should look that up.
Where was that?
Yeah.
Was it Switzerland?
Who knows?
I'm going to look it up. Keep talking amongst yourselves. I'm going to look it up.
Yes, look it up. And it could have been, there was a year there where I wasn't in the Gun Club. So it could have been 83. And that's when I was transitioning out of the Cramps. And it's all a little bit of a blur.
Looking up American bands and then trying to put the Fall in, you just get every gig they did in the autumn. That's the problem you've got.
Yes.
Yeah, it's one of them names.
By the Gun Club, you just get a list of shooting ranges. But
it was definitely 1984.
Yeah. I remember we did a festival together in Hamburg. With Nick, the Bad Seeds. That was
later. It was the Butthole Surfers.
Yes.
I seem to remember that being quite a wild night.
It was completely oversold. There was a riot outside. People broke windows and turned cars over. They were in revolt because many people bought tickets and couldn't get in. And I remember the Bad Seeds went on at, I think, 3:30 in the morning.
That's right.
It was like, oh my God. It was The Fall, Swans, The Butthole Surfers, and, with some maybe Crime in the City Solution or someone. By the time we got on, the audience had been pummeled to death.
I was going to say, there was a lot of noise made that night.
What year was that then?
Mid 80s, 87 maybe.
It was with Marcia. With The Fall, it was Marcia. And I was, I was in the, when was I in the Bad Seeds? 86, 87 to 89 or something.
Well, I think I'll to the Bad Seeds, but I found that gig in 1984. It was at Pandora Music Box Festival.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Rotterdam. What a lineup. Yeah. So on the same day, there was John Cale, Psychic TV, The Gun Club, Johnny Thunders, Pete Shelley, Tom Verlaine, The Fall. Not a bad lineup, that.
Yeah, well, pretty good.
I definitely watched John Cale and The Gun Club. I don't know why I didn't watch Pete Shelley. I should have watched Pete Shelley. Maybe he was on the same time as us because he was on a different room.
Yeah, there were different rooms. I remember that festival. I played a few times. I was already, you know, and that's like around when I met the band, really, you know. Yeah. That's when I met, you know, Mark. The first time I met Mark was probably the Gun Club played at Hacienda. And Mark came. Yeah, and maybe you were there. I don't know.
I was there.
But Mark made his way backstage. And we had parked the van out front. We hadn't stopped at the hotel. We parked the van out front and had all our luggage in the van, and it got burgled.
Oh, God.
So luckily, we had all our instruments and everything because we were on stage.
Yeah.
But we had no clothes.
Hey, genius thieves there. Well, exactly. Let's wait till he makes it out everything that's worth any money and then rob the van.
Exactly. And I remember Mark was like, I know every criminal in the area, and I will get to the bottom of this. We're like, you will not get to the bottom of this. but well-meaning.
Well, I think it was probably more he was trying to impress you rather than well-meaning. Yes. I would imagine. So that's when you got to know that, because you knew Marcia obviously already, I think, did you?
No, I met Marcia. I was already in probably 84, 85, the Gun Club moved to London. We decided it was a better choice for us to be near Europe and you know, we could work more and it's better than America for us. And we went on a big tour of Europe and UK. Like, I think it was like several back-to-back. It was one of those like endless things. And so when we got to London to move there, we promptly broke up. And I never want to see you again. I can't stand the sight of you chewing gum, the sound of you chewing gum or something like that. And so I was in London then, and I was staying with friends and then kind of a little bit at loose ends, you know, because there was no band anymore. And actually, I was friendly with Richard Thomas, who was helping out Jeffrey with sorting out some, you know, to find a record deal or something. You know, he was giving advice. And I won't say he was our manager, or he wouldn't say it. But he was helpful. Because Richard is very helpful in many ways, and at that time, he said, like, oh, you know, I know the squat that's opening up, and it has some Americans and friends of mine, and the old DJ from the Clash, Scratchy, and it's on Holloway Road, you know, and it's a nice, good area. So I went there and announced that I'm your new squat mate. And that's how I met Marcia.
Right. So we were both
a little bit at loose ends. They had their band, Khmer Rouge. But I was like in between everything. And I had a band with, I didn't like, called the Fur Bible with Patricia Morrison from the Gun Club. We had, you know, decided to start a band, but it was not to be.
Good name, Fur Bible.
Yeah, it was good. We made an EP, and again, it was the one like shameful spot in my life. You know, oh, this record, terrible. Oh, goth, it's terrible. You know, and terrible. And then like some maybe 10 years ago, people started coming up to me and saying, "That Fur Bible record's amazing, and I love That Fur Bible, and I've been looking for it, and I paid $100 for it." And I'm like, "What? Are you kidding?" Like, I'm hanging my head in shame, and then I listened to it, and I was like, "Oh, it's good."
Yeah,
you know, it's weird.
You're very hard on yourself, aren't you?
Well, it is. I want things to be good, but I think it's more like the personal stuff that was going on with people and the time, and associate what you associate with it. You know,
that's right. A lot of records are like that, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, you can listen to them later and go like, what was I thinking? That's amazing.
Yeah. It's difficult to divorce it from where you were at the time, though, isn't it?
Yeah, at the time, really.
Yeah, it takes a while. And so that's how I met Marcia. And you know, and then shortly after, I got asked to be in the Bad Seeds just to fill in for a tour. And she got asked to play in the fall, presumably just for a tour. And we ended up in those bands for a few years, a few records each. So
that's quite the CV you've got there, isn't it? Cramps,
it was pretty incredible.
So how was the Bad Seeds then?
Bad? No, just kidding. No, it was great. It was a great time. It was a great time with them. You know, it was.
So what was the lineup at that time?
Was it
Barry Adamson?
Yeah. What happened was, I met them, and Mick said, like, Barry's leaving the band, and Mick Harvey moved over to bass, and they needed a second guitar player. So, I did that, and then somehow I went to Berlin for rehearsals and decided I wanted to live there. And then somehow ended up in the Bad Seeds for some years, you know.
Yeah.
The chemistry was working. So, in more ways than one.
And, I know what you mean.
Yes, exactly. until they weren't working. Yeah. So I really fell in love with Berlin, which, you know, at the time was still West Berlin. So it was surrounded by these, it was very secluded. It felt very special. It was an
exciting place at that time.
Yeah, very exciting. And it was kind of a place that, you know, all the arts kind of met up because it was so small. Yeah. You know, it was like dance and visual art and rock music and performance art. You know, they were all the same people in the same world. So that was... that was great. And we did that Wim Wenders film, Wings of Desire. So that was a big, big thing and pretty incredible. And, but is it as incredible as me being in a fall video?
I was going to get started. How did that happen?
It's hard to know.
Before you go into it, if you ever go on the fall website, they have this discussion board, and there are pages and pages. Who's that guy? Who is that guy? Pages of speculation as to who it is.
He wanted someone who looked like a rock star.
Yes, that was funny because it was that was the intention, I think. Like, we'll just have this mysterious character. I'm not sure whose idea was, if it was Marx or Bricks or whoever. But it was idea. Like, let's just throw him in there in some scene, for no reason. tell him to pick up some blocks of wood off the floor and start playing them.
They were never the most directed fall videos, were they?
No. Yeah. I think the Victoria
The
Hit the North?
The North one was probably as big as we got with it all, yeah.
Yeah. That was
This is where Steve starts crying about how much money they spent on videos.
It could have gone and could have gone. Oh, there you go.
Well, that one play on MTV.
It's worth, yeah. It's worth every penny.
Yeah.
Yes. Worth every penny.
Yeah. All three pennies.
Yeah. But, so tell you what, yeah. you've worked with some people, haven't you? You've worked with some kind of fairly heavy frontmen.
It's kind of surprising you never ended up in the Fall, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I know it is. Huh? But
one thing is from your CV.
There was no shortage of members going through that. Going through there. If you miss the revolving door, if you miss the, you know, I missed
it. Yeah, let me warm down in a minute.
Yes.
Yeah, but the thing about it, the one thing they weren't short of was guitarists. You had guitarists coming out your ears in them days, Steve, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Craig, Carl, Bricks,
Simon.
There's loads of them on every corner.
But,
so where did it get to in the charts in the end at the North? Did it didn't get in the 40, did it?
I think it got to 40, I think. I'm not sure.
It seemed really popular. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there were about 43 different versions of it, weren't there? That was one thing that really good with that remix. I mean, they're all exactly the same as well.
They're not.
All right, okay. What's the difference then?
Well, there's some of them. The band aren't even on.
I didn't think there was much of the band on the proper one, was there?
Oh, come on. Brothers.
You're not even over there.
Break it up.
Brilliant. So then we got to get, how did you get out of the bad seeds? Was that just because it was bad for your health, or was it?
Yeah, mostly. And they were changing. Yeah, another band that had a big revolving door.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
The time had come for me to say goodbye. And they were, going into a more acoustical way. Mm. They were going to make an aggressive acoustic record, which they did. And and I was not going to pick up an acoustic guitar.
have you done it yet? Have you picked one yet?
I have. But I haven't played it live though.
No.
Would I be a folk? I'm going to be a folk artist.
Yeah. Johnny, you can't put your arms on the memory. That's pretty good. True.
No. I love the acoustic guitar, and actually, I recently did a solo thing with electric guitar, and I thought I should have done this with an acoustic guitar.
So, well, you can always do it again. Coming.
Yeah, so it's coming. I have the guitar.
Yeah. So what made you finally get around to write a book? Because this is something I wanted to ask. It's kind of like a cheap therapy for both of you, I think, the experience of writing a book. It's quite cathartic, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to write it because I understood that I had a unique trajectory, and the people I worked with, and I had a up-close view of all of it.
Yeah.
And also, other things to explain about me. And actually a lot of why I wanted to do it, because I wanted to explain what mine and Jeffrey's volatile and sometimes a relationship was like, mm-hmm. But that it was a relationship and it was a brotherhood and it was, something incredibly important to me and that I appreciated that, mm-hmm. That is something that whenever anyone writes about Jeffrey, it's always, the own worst enemy. Enfant terrible. And really he was a dreamer and, he was just going his own way. He's a dreamer and visionary, amazing songwriter. He's just in, a lot of the times he didn't have social graces, of any sort. And it was, and I don't know if he could communicate, that. And I think that was a problem with a lot of his band members is that he wasn't able to communicate being appreciative of them. And they felt, slighted, which I could see. But I somehow got the appreciation from him.
You say that it must be down to your personality for you to be able to get on amicably and leave amicably with Lux Interior, Jeffrey Lee Pierce, Nick Cave. It does speak to something in your character,
which is a doormat. No, I'm just kidding.
Probably works a very little more. Yeah, so,
but they're well, you know, also considering my self-taught, you know, way. I wasn't really virtuoso, you know, guitarist, musician, you know, it's just a self-taught making up something out of whatever, you know, came into my mind and not really following. Yeah. I still don't know. I still don't play in any standard tuning No, I play in either open E or open G. And actually in the Bad Seeds, I had a C tuning that was quite strange.
That is very strange.
So it was kind of like a Middle Eastern sort of sound. More like a Venus and Furs, Velvet Underground kind of sound. You know, I think that, you know, especially at that time, you know, like the Bad Seeds and the Cramps, you know, they were kind of cast like a film, like actors in a film. You know, there were characters that they wanted, and I think Nick wanted people who were kind of off in their own cosmos and not, you know, part of anything else. And that was what was interesting to them. And I happened to be in that that genre of a musician, and plus, you know, I could wear a suit. I can look good. I think that has something to do with it too.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you still got the shirt you had on in that Goo Goo Muck video live. What a beautiful shirt that was.
I wish I did. I remember I bought that in Paris when the first time the Cramps played. And it was a shop that was like, you know, the rock and roll, the French rock and roll, the American rock and roll. So it was like all like vests made out of Harley Davidson tires and things like this. You know, very, very American. Harley bike rock and roll. And but they had that gold lamé shirt in there. And I was like, okay, well, that.
Oh, yeah.
That will
my attention.
Hey, I wanted to tell you, the House of All is fantastic.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very good of you.
I really enjoy it. I play it several times.
Wow, and, thank you.
Listen to it. Yeah. It's good. I'm always kind of interested in bands that were in other bands that were of note, you know, and that when they make original music, it's, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's working really well with you.
Prepared for it not to work.
Yeah.
Going in.
It's a gamble.
It's always a gamble, you know, with what's going to happen, you know, because you don't know.
No, really. I mean, look, we weren't gambling with our own money, so that was
exactly.
I think this is the first time any of us have just gone in with nothing, though, isn't it? And seeing what happened.
On paper, it was a monumentally stupid idea to do it that way, really, but it worked much better than I think it would have done if we'd have sat around saying, we've all got to sit around and write something that we think's good enough to show Martin and Pete Greenway and everybody else, you know. You'd have got tied up in yourself, I think.
Yeah, the same thing. Well, we just did that. We just made a new album. Like I said, we were a four-piece band forever. Now we've gone down to a three-piece. And we just made an album, but it was very similar. We went in like, we all had some ideas, but not anything anyone knew. And I'm really pleased with the results. You know? You never know.
It could have been out soon.
Well, it'll be out probably end of the year, early next year.
So are you playing much of it on these dates then, or?
Yeah, we'll be playing a lot of the songs live. We were hoping it would be out by now.
Always the way, isn't it? Yeah, so where are you playing then? Wait, you're not playing Manchester, you're playing London?
We're playing in London at Oslo, I believe the 26th, and we're playing at the Cluny in Newcastle.
Okay, yeah.
And that's a good venue. We're playing in Nottingham. And then we're playing
Edinburgh Bridge?
No, we're playing in Glasgow. In Glasgow at a place called Room 2. And, okay. We're actually in the daytime, we're doing a show at the prison.
Wow.
Which I'm feeling very Johnny Cash about. To play at a Glasgow prison. I'm not sure what to expect, but it seems
How did that come about?
Somehow the promoter of the show has done it with other bands. And I thought,
we've never done.
The prison.
Like you say, you just feel like at San Quentin, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to avoid the analogy.
Were you with the Cramps when they played the
Institution? Brian.
Yeah, was it
Brian?
Right. That is a freaky bit of film.
That is great, and the filmmakers have just made a kind of restored film of the entire event. Like a feature length, I think, or very much longer than just the clips that are on YouTube. They made a whole, because there was other bands playing and different things happening. So they've made the full length event. And it's actually playing at a film festival in Tucson while I'm away, because they asked me to speak at it, but I was obviously not there. But I want to see it. Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a very amazing, perfect moment in time, in that time and in the career.
I don't really know this. Where are they playing?
It's a mental institution. It's probably not the politically correct word for it these days, but it's a.
In Napa, or maybe.
Yeah.
And it's in Northern California near San Francisco. And they somehow got in as the entertainment. Someone let them put on a punk rock show. And this San Francisco band called the Mutants are always playing, who are really crazy, like a B-52s sort of thing. And the Cramps. And it's just great. Oh, you got to look it up, Stephen.
It's amazing. Definitely worth digging out. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then at one point, Lex goes, "They told me you people are crazy, but I'm not so sure about that."
Brilliant. Yeah. I must watch that again. Yeah, definitely. Right?
Yeah. Okay. So good.
I'm going to let you go now.
Okay, well, it's great to talk to you.
Absolute joy to speak to you. I hope the gates go really well.
Thank you.
And hope Mark looks after you when you're in Salford. I'm sure he will.
Yes, he will.
I'm sure he will.
He's lovely. He's wonderful.
He is.
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah. Always.
Okay.
Always.
Right.
Okay. Cheers.
Thanks for doing it.
Good to talk to you. Yeah. Talk to you later.
Keep well.
Okay.
All right, and good luck with the walk as well.
Thanks for joining us for this week's Old Brother. You can find us on Spotify and Apple and all usual suspects, and we're hosted at shows.acast.com/old-brother. Huge thanks to Kid Congo Powers. If you caught the band on their recent UK tour, you'll know just how good the Pink Monkey Birds are, and if you're not familiar with them, do check them out, and check out the Cramps while you're at it. They're live at the California State Mental Hospital in 1978, might not be one for a first date. As for us, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram and X, or whatever the hell it's called this week, at Old Brother Show, to keep up with all the latest news. And don't forget to like or give us a rating on your favourite platform. You can even tell your friends about us if you fancy. And remember, if you're driving, check your car. Ta-da!